Now, we have Dr. Augusto Zimmermann. He is from Australia. And Dr. Zimmermann, sind Sie da?
Yeah. It's a pleasure to be attending this event.
Okay, fantastic. Could you maybe introduce yourself to us?
Yes, I'm a professor of law at originally Murdoch University. I was associate dean for research for more than 10 years. The head of the unit constitutional law. I was the unit coordinator for constitutional law and also for legal theory. And now I am working in a new university that's been created. It's called Sheridan Institute of Higher Education. And we are at the process now of establishing a law school. I was for 5 years law reform commissioner with the Law Reform Commission of Western Australia from 2012 to 2017, amongst other activities that I have exercised here.
Okay, and you're going to tell us about the situation in Australia, which we have learned from other countrymen of yours is very dire. However, there's still hope, and there's lots of people who are rising up in the meantime. You're also going to tell us about, the elite's death wish. I find that very intriguing. What is this about?
Well, look, perhaps I should start then with the elite's death wish. This is indeed an article that I have published in The Spectator Australia a couple of months ago, and it was to explain old connections between some members of the American establishment and the Chinese government. I found out, for instance, that the head of the Chase Manhattan Bank was actually connected with Mao Zedong, and in 1972 wrote a very interesting article, and scary, by the way, in the New York Times, praising Mao Zedong when he had executed about 40 million of his own citizens. Then in this article, he explained some of the background behind the idea of population reduction and control. There was an event in the 1990s organized by the Texas Academy of Science in 1992, if I'm not wrong. And one of the professors there, a professor of biology from the University of Texas, actually stated that in order to solve the problem of overpopulation and protect the environment, it would be necessary for a disease to be spread, a virus to be created that could potentially decimate 90% of the population. And as far as I know, according to the accounts that have been provided, his speech was actually well received by many. And that makes it even more scary. And now we know very clear, it's a matter of fact now, that the Wuhan virus was partially, at least, sponsored by American taxpayers via that Anthony Fauci's organization. So we start to feel that this might be just a coincidence, but it's certainly something that leads to food for thought.
We have, Professor Zimmermann, we have learned from one of the investigative journalists whom we interviewed, a guy from Sweden, Ole Damegard is his name. We have learned that the original idea, we couldn't verify this, but he's a very well-known and thorough investigator. The original idea was to create this virus and make it so dangerous that it would initially kill off millions or even billions. But for some reason, that plan didn't go through. And that's why they needed to create this PCR test pandemic in order to scare people up and in order to get them then vaccinated so that the virus, which wasn't there or which wasn't dangerous enough, would then be injected into the people so that finally they would have the pandemic. Do you think there's any truth to this?
Well, look, this is a very interesting possibility. I'm not so sure whether this is the case, but what I can say is that the virus is very mild, and it's certainly something that it shouldn't be a matter of concern for people below the age of 60 unless they have some morbidity. But what is happening here is that some of these people, including the population of this country where I live, are being forced by the government to take the vaccine. And we know very clearly that the virus is not as deadly as it was expected to be. The mortality rate is very low. But they are now in the process of forcing even children to get this vaccine. So the vaccine, as you know, is only experimental. I have the impression that the idea of having the vaccine imposed upon the population was envisaged from the very beginning. Because, you see, the virus is quite mild. But what's happening here is that regardless of the potential lethality of the virus, everybody here in Australia, for instance, is being instigated, even coerced, I would say, by both federal government and state governments in Australia to get vaccinated. So this makes me highly suspicious that there is something not being well explained, especially when you know very well, and I'm pretty sure that those who are listening to us know it very well, that not so many, especially teenagers and children, will be severely affected by the virus. I just wonder then why the government is imposing vaccination even on children in Australia, even when the parents oppose such action. So the children are being forced to vaccination even when the parents oppose such a measure.
You mean they go? How does that work? Are they physically forced, or do they get fined, the parents, if they don't agree? How does it work?
Well, it's very interesting because you send your kids to the school, and the school claims that they are taking the kids for a tour, and it's not really a tour. They are bused into these facilities when they are actually vaccinated. And there is one particular case of a parent who had his suspicions that this would be the case and made it very clear, explicitly expressed in words in a letter to the school that the child should not get vaccinated. But what happened is that the child, being of the age of 12 years, was told by the principal of the school that he could overrule the decision made by the parent by signing another authorization. And that's why led to this child to get the vaccine. So parental rights and the right of the parents to basically make a decision on these matters have been basically disregarded by the Australian authorities.
But that is complete lawlessness.
Yeah, it's lawlessness.
Absolutely. And we know very well the potential side effects of the vaccine, and it makes absolutely no sense to impose such experiment on children when you know that the vaccine has collateral effects that can be more detrimental to a child than the virus itself.
So, but let me ask you, so at the moment they are kind of like luring people into like getting the vaccine, like the children, or like putting social pressure on them. But so far it's not yet that they come to your house and really, you know, grab you and put the needle in your arm. Or has that happened also?
They could. Of course they could, because we are under emergency powers. So in theory, every single state government in Western Australia under emergency powers, certainly here in Western Australia, Victoria, and other jurisdictions, can have this sort of effect, these laws, including the visitation of police officers without a warrant and the imposition of these measures, including forced vaccination on those who are reluctant. So it is totally possible. With the use of emergency powers, we have a situation that's quite distressful to many people because they are not really protected under the Constitution and fundamental rights and freedoms. These freedoms can be basically ignored by governments under the excuse that in order to face this deadly virus, the government can basically disregard the fundamental legal provisions that we find in very important documents. So this is the use of emergency powers taken to extreme. And it reminds me very clearly what happened in the 1930s in a certain country, because we are facing a very similar reality here of the government having these extraordinary powers to do basically whatever they wish with the citizen. I live in Western Australia, and I consider myself a person who lives in a comfortable concentration camp, because I am not allowed to leave even the state anymore, not even to cross the interstate borders, which is in total violation of Section 92 of the Australian Constitution, which establishes that the citizens should have the right to cross the borders. But the borders are closed for Western Australians. Now we are approaching Christmas, and they have just renewed the emergency powers so that there will be many families that will be actually not able to be united over the Christmas period, because some of the relatives are not living in the state and they'll be forbidden to cross the borders.
And how do they enforce the not crossing the border obligation? Do they are really streets locked off, or is it just, is it that if they catch you, you get a fine or go to prison?
Yeah, they can do all sorts of things, including prohibiting indeed the person even from crossing the border, although this individual might very well be a citizen of Western Australia. And if he manages to do so, which is not necessarily guaranteed, you have to stay in a facility, perhaps a hotel, for about 14 days. And it's not assured that after this you will be necessarily released. So we have this problem here of the government basically making it impossible for people to actually cross the border in Western Australia, even if they have a second job in another state. And the problem also is that he is promising that if everybody gets the vaccine, that would be around 90% of the population, then he would open the border. But of course, we know very well that now the person will have to get the booster, and there will be many boosters ahead. So there is not a guarantee that even if the person gets the first vaccine, that he will be able to cross the borders.
This is very, very frightening. What do you make of the fact that the most pressure in this lockstep approach, which is a worldwide kind of thing that's going on, what do you make of the fact that the most pressure is being applied on those countries that belong to the Commonwealth, Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom? What do you think is causing this?
Yeah, this is a very good question. I would be more comfortable to explain the Australian reality. But what I have to say from the outset is that many of my fellow citizens have just lost their jobs because the government is starting to mandate vaccines. So for some professions, and the idea is that potentially every single person who happens to have an employment in Australia will necessarily be forced or coerced into get this experimental jab. So that is one of the things that I have been even writing articles about. But to answer more properly your question, what leads to this situation? Australians have always believed that the government is a sort of benevolent protector of society, because we didn't have, as we had in Germany, a very terrible oppressive government that potentially can lead to mass murder. What's happening in Australia is that we have a sort of idea that the government ultimately seeks the well-being of the community. We didn't have to fight against tyranny in the past. We had somehow the rule of law relatively working until quite recently. And when I came to Australia 22 years ago, I was impressed with the fact that Australians are very complacent, and they actually believe in whatever the government tells them to do. It's a very law-abiding society, and they tend, Australians, to take things very easy going, as they say. So it's the idea that the government will ultimately be working for the well-being and the benefit of the society. And that leads also to the possibility of a sort of overconfidence in the authorities. It's the idea that the politicians indeed necessarily will always look for us and you take care of the society. I would even speculate, and I might even write an article about this, whether this is not an intended consequence of the welfare state, the idea that the government is always the ultimate benevolent provider for the society. Everybody assumes that whatever government does is necessary for the well-being of the community. And I think this is one of the problems.
Professor Zimmermann, I agree with you, because this is what we heard from the from members of the European Parliament who gave two press conferences. And these members of the European Parliament are from, most of them, from Eastern European countries. And they told us, when we asked, how is it that your people understand what's going on, refuse to get vaccinated, while the Western world, in particular, Western Europe, is complacent and compliant. Yeah. And they said, well, there's an easy explanation for this, because here in our Eastern European countries, the memory of fascism, of totalitarianism, is only one generation away. It happened only one generation ago. So we have it fresh in our minds what this is like. And you don't, because in Germany in particular, it's three generations away and you have forgotten all about it. That's why you trust your government, when in reality you can't, no one can trust our governments anymore, because they're not our governments. We voted for them, or some of us did, I didn't, but they were presented to us by the people who are running the World Economic Forum. They're most of them graduates of the Young Global Leaders Program, but that is why they understand and we don't. And in your case, in Australia's case, it's probably even worse, because they were conditioned over probably decades, probably more than just a few decades. They were conditioned to believe that their government would take care of them and would have their best interests in mind. A benevolent government, which in reality, if you take down the mask, you see the eagle face, the evil face that is behind it.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is that some of the parliaments here very clearly are not forcing vaccination upon certain elements of the ruling classes, including the politicians themselves. There is no mandate imposed upon members of parliament, for instance. But some categories of citizens who work in certain professions are now being coerced into vaccination, and including my friends in the police force, the good police officers who are now losing their jobs in Western Australia. One interesting thing about the use of emergency powers is that it has allowed the Premier of Victoria to invade properties, storm houses, and arrest even a pregnant woman in front of her children without no reason whatsoever, apart from her posting a message on her Facebook supporting a rally that would take place in a different city. So it's amazing that now we have people now being arrested for protesting against arbitrary measures and trying to uphold the rule of law even, because the government is clearly acting in a rather arbitrary fashion and undermining the process, the very important doctrine of separation of powers. We now no longer have a proper separation of powers in Australia due to the fact that the decisions are normally made by the executive. And most of these decisions are not even made by elected representatives of the people. They're made by chief health advisors without any sort of accountability and transparency whatsoever. So the whole tradition of checks and balances and separation of powers are being entirely destroyed in this country. And to make it even more amazing, now that the Premier of Victoria is claiming that he prefers to rule without having to renew the emergency powers. So he is now passing legislation in Parliament that will make him no longer needing even to renew the emergency powers, which is quite amazing because not even the dictator of Germany in the 1930s had such a courage, because he renewed the Enabling Act every 4 years. And here this guy wants to just not have to bother about renewing the emergency powers. And he's acting as a total and complete dictator. And to make it even worse, some premiers are emulating him. And the premier of Western Australia has just initiated legislative reforms, and he has passed now an important act that makes him to take over the upper house in Western Australia, so that not even the upper house will be able to restrain the actions of the government. So we are really, really in the process of no longer having a normal functional democracy, and perhaps we are never going to have it again unless people decided to lawfully resist these instances of oppression and tyranny that are taking place in Australia.
Is that what's happening now? Has it come to the point that so many red lines have been crossed that even the most peaceful and the most gullible, let me put it that way, person is beginning to realize if they don't rise up, they're gonna die? Is that an understanding?
They are actually starting to. Yeah. Uh-huh. Tomorrow we are going to have a very important rally, a nationwide rally, and I'm very honored to be one of the speakers at the city of Perth. And last time we held a similar rally, we managed to have more than 60,000 concerned citizens. I expect that you might have more this time, because so many people now have lost their jobs. They are not now unemployed because they have not caved in the demands of the government for them to be the subject of this experimental vaccine. So we now have people in a position that they are basically not having anything to lose anymore. And when I go to my house, because I live just 2 blocks away from my workplace, I cross a sea of people who are now living on the streets. So I have never had this experience, this in my whole life, of having to actually cross the streets where there are plenty of people now living as homeless people on the streets of Perth. So the misery is increasing remarkably. And also, of course, all these things lead to the increase of divorce and mental illnesses because it causes desperation. And people who are desperate, they tend to do silly things because they have nothing to lose. So what I'm trying to do is to instruct the crowds to uphold the rule of law, to basically fight for the rights and freedoms in a proper manner, because it is the government itself that is acting in a way that's tyrannical and in violation of fundamental principles of the constitution of this country, and as a result, inevitably violating basic elements for the realization of the rule of law in our society.
I think it's very, very important that we get this detailed report from Australia, because since we see this lockstep approach all around the world, we can see what's in it, you know, what the future holds for us if we continue, let it continue down that road that's already, you know, been long walked on in Australia. I was wondering, is there any, are you in contact with people from the police force or the military? I mean, do you have whistleblowers from there? Like the situation, the atmosphere in these forces is? Is there resistance?
Yeah, it is an amazing thing what's happening. The police commissioner in Western Australia, his name is Chris Dawson. He has been now appointed the vaccine commander. But for me, this word is pretty scary, because that is as if he's declaring war. The government is declaring war on the people, because you don't have a commander in peace, in times of peace. So the word commander, it's a very bad sign that they are actually forcing this sort of measures on the people. And they have dismissed hundreds, countless of good coppers, we say coppers, police officers here in Western Australia, because they have not caved in and they decided to not be subject to the experiment. As a result, they lost their jobs. I was able to help them because I have many friends who are legal practitioners. I'm a law academic, I'm not a legal practitioner, But I have many friends who are, and I have introduced one of my friends in the police force who lost his job, and now he's being advised by one of the best lawyers here in Western Australia, and we are initiating a law action, a class action against the government to see if he can have his job returned. But I think it's important to make this point. Some of the judicial rulings in this country have been quite disgraceful. And one thing we don't have in Australia is appointment of judges that are appointed with total independence from political pressure and influence. Because judges in Australia are invariably appointed by politicians. It's the problem, because I see that being a causing this undesirable thing of judges not necessarily upholding the law as it should be upheld. And I'm starting to be really concerned that some of these rulings are not necessarily going to lead to a necessarily good outcome.
Out of the many important things that you told us, one thing I want to hearken back to, and that is in your introduction, you said that David Rockefeller was an admirer of Mao Zedong, who at that time exterminated 60 million Chinese, his own countrymen. And Rockefeller published or wrote an article in the New York Times praising this man for killing people. What is this about? What does this tell us? Is there an alliance between the, let's say, Anglo-American elite and the Chinese leadership? Is that what explains why they are dividing the spoils amongst themselves? We know that the American platforms are trying to take over much of the German economy as far as retail is concerned, for example. That's Amazon, of course. But we also know through whistleblowers that the Chinese are taking over our automobile industry. Is this really an alliance that we can see here?
Well, it looks like, and it's quite suspicious, because you know that the previous statements have been very much in favor of somehow a sort of population reduction and control. As a former law reform commissioner, I used to interact with members of parliament quite often, and I can tell you that I have learned to not have any confidence in their behavior, because they treat the people of Australia in particular with utter disregard. And I would say that perhaps that's the same approach that the elites in America take in regards to the American people. So they see that we have a problem, and the problem has to be solved, namely the protection, the necessary protection of the environment. And they would be willing to take very radical measures. These discussions about the necessity to reduce the population by 90%, I witnessed that when I was the senior vice president of the Liberal Party, in my division. So I was the senior vice president of the Liberal Party, which is now in power at the federal level, when I was in my division of Fremantle. And I could witness the discussions of the elites always very much in contempt of what the people or the average citizen had to expected of government, but at the same time believing that it would be a necessary thing to take some measures that could potentially be quite radical, but to control the growth of the population in Australia in order to protect the environment of the country. So the whole idea about the environmental need, the need of protecting the environment and the reduction of the population is a link that I have witnessed in my own conversations with the political class in this country.
So do you expect this to be the next big thing after Corona? They're going to switch over to climate control or global warming, and they're going to use that as an excuse for the next, measures that will curb or ultimately, of course, destroy democracy, because they pretend that it is important for the people to be controlled by the government so that the environment isn't destroyed. It's so insane. I mean, it's so obvious that these people are complete idiots.
Yeah. And we started to think whether they were really upset with the fact that people have made decisions quite recently that are not supported by them, including in the UK, the idea of the Brexit, in the United States, the election of Trump. So they are actually very upset with the average citizen. And what I believe is that democracy is no longer something that they really have a commitment to protect. What we are witnessing, including in Australia and certainly in European countries and in the United States, is the rise of the illiberal elites. So these are elites who have no commitment to the protection of individual rights and freedoms, even because they believe that the people are actually causing environmental damage, that we have a problem of overpopulation that must be controlled. So this is the death wish that I mentioned in my article. This whole idea that these people have no love, no compassion for the average citizen. They actually want to declare war on them. They are unhappy with the fact that they don't have convinced them to push the measures to go further and have the measures that they were trying to implement by democratic normal means. And another thing they try to do very clearly is to impose their decisions via judicial activism as well. Because some decisions that you see in many jurisdictions, and I would even include Australians, are very strange to say the least, because they contradict not only the original intent of the constitutional drafter, but they also contradict previous decisions of the court that had indeed in the past a commitment to protect these fundamental rights and freedoms. I can refer, for instance, to the decision of the first Chief Justice of the Australian High Court, Sir Samuel Griffith. In Heard at Parker in 1907, he made the point that the judicial function in Australia must be exercised in terms of protecting individual rights to freedom, to property, and to life. And we are not seeing this happening at all. Our tradition in the common law is that everybody is free until the law decides otherwise, but the government is subject to legality, even because the Constitution is very clear that the powers given to the Commonwealth are explicitly mentioned in the Constitution under Section 51, and the remaining ones are to be subject to certain principles and rules that must be always respected. And this is not what's happening at this present moment, unfortunately.
Well, we're seeing the same thing in Germany, Professor Zimmermann. You may have heard about this. They installed one of their puppets at the very top of the constitutional law, which is supposedly the highest court here. And they're deliberately and quite obviously demolishing what is left of democracy. It's already in a shambles, but they're trying to completely get rid of it. However, here in this country, many people are rising up, many people are waking up, and that, of course, may explain why the other side is sort of running amok right now. Is that happening in Australia too? I asked you this before, and you mentioned that you've never seen all these homeless people on the streets. Is that what's driving them to finally rise up? Because ultimately what we're dealing with here, you calling this a death wish, what we're dealing with is our governments, which are not our governments, are literally trying to kill us. Do they understand this?
Absolutely, and that's why they're not playing by the rules. And they are completely and utterly ignoring the rule of law. And they are acting in a way that's in total violation of our traditions in the West. So the whole idea about governments being used for the purposes of serving the community and the law ultimately aspiring the realization of the common good is completely ignored. And it reminds me of the behavior of the legal profession in Germany in the 1930s. I actually have written an article to explain that they were disarmed by what we could regard as narrow legal positivism. That is a total disregard for the idea of natural law and the idea of constitutional government. So this use of emergency powers can justify governments to do whatever they want, including sending people to concentration camps, including eventually killing people and forcing people to get these many boosters that will ultimately achieve the same result, that is to destroy the lives of countless people and potentially, as we expect, even these measures leading to genocide.
And one practical question, like, you know, with all these like homeless on the streets now and like, you know, no hope and all this like police aggression or like, you know, these extreme measures. Do you see, is this like pushing toward like having a proper, you know, like a civil war going on and then they can come in with like even more military or police brutality and kind of make
the... Yeah, well, Hayek, in his book, Law, Legislation, and Liberty, published in the 1970s, made this point very clearly that emergency powers, they tend to initially, the allegation being that they are temporary, but over the time, governments tend to appreciate the fact that they have accumulated so much power and control over society, and the natural tendency of emergency powers is to become permanent measures. And they are never returned to the citizen, the rights and freedoms that have been taken away as a result. We know very well that the Enabling Act in the 1930s in Germany led to a renewal of these emergency enabling acts every 4 years until the Enabling Act was repealed by the Allies when they invaded the country in 1945. So my expectation is that once the emergency powers are put in place, these measures tend to become permanent. And the only way we'll be able to restore the rule of law and the protection, legal protection, individual rights and freedoms is by the population becoming conscientious that they are now under an oppressive regime and that they will have to indeed exercise their lawful right to resist tyranny. And Professor Moyes and I are now about to publish a book which will contain two chapters that are quite important. One is Lessons from the Totalitarian Past, and the other chapter is going to be entitled On Civil Disobedience, where we are going to provide all the elements necessary for a lawful right to resist.
We have in our Constitution Section 20.4, and it explicitly states that the people have a right to resist if the democratic system is in danger of being destroyed. We, even according to the assessment of one of our most important professors of law in this country, his name is Martin Schwab, but there's another one, Dieter Mursky, even in their view, this red line has been crossed quite a few months ago, but it is important ultimately, and I think we all agree on this, Professor Zimmerman, it's important for the people to really exercise their lawful rights to resist. Lawful is the word, is the catchword here. It has to be lawful.
Absolutely.
We have to resist this tyranny, but we cannot give them an excuse to push down even harder on us, as Viviana just mentioned, because that's probably just what they're waiting for. What they do not understand, as you mentioned earlier, they don't understand anything about empathy and compassion and emotions. So that's why they don't understand how us, the resistance, will always come up with new ideas. But we must keep in mind that we shall not, we must avoid brutality and violence, of course.
Yeah, and that reminds me of Gustav Hadebroek, who was the Minister of Justice under the Weimar regime, when he very clearly realized that his legal positivism had not allowed him, better say, to create a proper jurisprudential approach that could help the legal profession to resist the arbitrary measures of the government of the day. So what happens in Australia, and I can tell you, is that we have been contaminated as a result, perhaps, of the very poor level of legal training and education in this country to be legal positivists by default. What I call legal positivism by default is because most of the lawyers in this country are just legal practitioners. They do not understand legal history, and they have a zero knowledge of jurisprudence. If they did have, they would be able to uphold the natural law, or at least, just, and I'm not even asking so much now, to understand what the rule of law actually means. The same term that in Germany has a different or similar approach, I don't know, it's called the Rechtsstaat. So I think what you need to basically recover now is our legal traditions, the idea that the government has to uphold certain principles that ultimately are protective of individual rights and freedoms. And you need to have this in combination of a proper system of checks and balances and of separation of powers. None of these things are taking place in this country, and the judiciary in Australia is allowing a takeover of legislative role of functions by the executive. So we now have a dictatorship of a bunch of politicians who control their cabinet. And the cabinet makes all the decisions, in particular, of course, the person of the premier. So it's no longer a normal parliamentary system anymore. And most of the decisions and rules are now not made by the parliament under the parliamentary process, but they are rather made in a rather arbitrary fashion by even unelected people, but under the control of the premier and a small number of politicians that control the cabinet.
Legal positivism is, of course, the enemy of real law. You know, that's probably one of the most important results of the Nuremberg trials, because they did not, they should have, if they had adhered to legal positivism, they should have listened to the excuses that the perpetrators gave for what they did. We followed orders, but they didn't. Because natural law says we all have an innate understanding of what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is evil. And if someone tells you to kill a girl, a child, then you must know that you must not follow this order. So that's what we're going to have to come back with. And I think we're on the right track, because they are forcing us. They are forcing us now to form our own judiciary. And we will. We are in the process of doing this.
Wonderful. And what I have to say is that this is the best that our tradition can offer. Because you know that St. Thomas Aquinas made the point very clearly that a law that's not just is not law at all. It's a defective law. You can perhaps have an alarm clock and call that such a thing, but if it doesn't work, doesn't exercise its proper function. We can have a car you call a car, but if it doesn't work, it's not exercising its proper function. So what happens is that as a result of this approach, St. Augustine in the City of God made the point very clear that what distinguishes a proper government from a bunch of criminal thugs is the fact that the law serves the common good. Otherwise, there is no distinction whatsoever between a criminal gang and a normal government. So the government and the rules that the government creates are necessarily aiming, if the government has legitimacy, the achievement of the common good. And as you put it quite well, during the Nuremberg trial, these terrible people alleged that they were just following orders. And that argument failed miserably. And they were tried and judged and condemned under the principles of a higher law jurisprudence. And I believe that's what is going to happen again. I have faith that we are going to prevail and that these people will be brought to judgment for the crimes they have committed.
Absolutely. Yes. That's what we're working on. And very, very, very shortly, we will start with such an international effort. Okay.
Wonderful.
Professor Zimmermann, this was a real pleasure. I'm impressed and I learned a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. God bless you and keep up the good work. I'm a great admirer of what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And have a great weekend.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And you too. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.